This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Felix Leit, CBS News, and the Moscow Times reporting on the imminent Duma elections in Russia within days. However, we must begin with a headline here in America about the president of Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin. Felix, a very good day to you in Moscow. The headline in your paper in the Moscow Times, Putin self-isolates over inner circle coronavirus cases. He is 68. He has had the vaccine. His friends and colleagues and workers have had the vaccine. What is the understanding of the risk here? Why now? What's happened? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, yeah, so, you know, we don't really know. The Putin circle is very sort of hermetic. You don't really get much news out of it and you don't get much information out of it. But we do now know that Putin is self-isolating for a week, which will take him past these parliamentary elections, of course. So maybe it's an opportunity for him to take a little holiday from the campaign trail, as it were. But I think in general, you know, Putin's an interesting guy. He's very, very, very self-conscious about his health. You know, he's very sort of, you could almost call him a germphobe. You know, for the entire duration of the pandemic, he has been essentially in a very strict quarantine regime. You have to quarantine for 2 weeks before you meet him in person. And I assume that wasn't applied to Joe Biden back in the summer, but, you know, to sort of lesser mortals, you very much, you know, it is absolutely essential. You won't see Putin unless you quarantine for a very, very, very long time. And so this is quite an interesting thing because it's very at odds with the sort of wider Russian approach to coronavirus, which frankly is quite lackadaisical. You know, there's not been that much sort of, you know, observance of things like quarantines, of social distance. And so the president's real kind of zeal in observing this is quite extraordinary, especially now when, you know, all the sort of remaining restrictions are being lifted. And it's a very strange move. And I'm a little bit intrigued by it. But I suppose, you know, he's a man, you know, who's getting on in years. He's concerned about his health, so fair enough.
But it's an interesting move. Felix, this is Russia.
Where
conspiracy theories are, you know, never die, right? So it is a puzzle why someone who was isolated from the general public for at least the length of the pandemic and has been very careful about his public events is now wanting to he didn't have to tell us he was self-isolated.
He didn't. It's interesting, yeah.
How does that move anything? All right, we'll leave that mystery unsolved. Vladimir Putin, 68 years old, which is the target zone for the virus, and I acknowledge that he has the vaccine, but we know the Delta variant penetrates the vaccine, and I'm careful too, Felix. So good for Vladimir Putin. I hope this inspires other senior members of the Russian Federation to be careful, to be cautious, especially because of Delta. Now the Duma elections. What is the Duma, and what role does it play in a state that is keen on the Kremlin's opinion first, second, and third?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a good question. So the Duma is Russia's sort of national parliament. Its national legislature, you know, has been since 1991 and the emergence of the Russian Federation from the Soviet Union. Now, back in the 90s, in the Yeltsin years, the Duma was very, very influential because the president, Boris Yeltsin, of course, was, you know, quite weak. And he did have to sort of, you know, deal with the Duma, deal with the national parliament. More recently, you know, the Duma's become pretty tame. It's become a sort of like like, you know, kind of a talking shop full of not particularly popular and not particularly attractive sort of legislators, overwhelmingly dominated by Putin's United Russia party. But at the same time, it's always very important to remember that, you know, obviously though Russia isn't functionally a democracy, it's not a sort of a, it's very much not like the People's Republic of China. It's not like a purpose-built authoritarian state. It's got a very democratic constitution, but in practice, it operates as an authoritarian state. And the Duma is interesting because we still have elections to the Duma. We have them every 5 years. And United Russia, that's again Putin's party, has never really been that popular. You know, Putin personally is a very popular guy in Russia, but his party really isn't. And so, you know, we almost lurch every 5 years, with the exception of 5 years ago when it was a very, very quiet and very peaceful election season. We almost have a sort of a big Duma election crisis, quite often. You know, 2011 was a big wave of protests because of election rigging with the Duma. And so it's always a kind of a pressure point for the Kremlin, I think.
You have taught me, Felix, for some months now, that the Kremlin is very sensitive to public opinion. Very.
That came up
during the wildfires of Siberia, which continue. And the Kremlin dispatched extra firefighters and talked about it. Yes. And Vladimir Putin embraced climate change as he had not before. So is the Duma a way of expressing public or staying in touch with public opinion? Does it function as an opinion maker?
Well, certainly I think it's important in this kind of relationship between sort of the public, the Russian people, and Vladimir Putin. You know, there is a very, 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 shall we say, limited range of opposition parties that are allowed to contest Duma elections. But there is a range of opinions that can and are represented in the Duma. And Russians have a choice to vote for these various parties. You know, there's a degree of vote rigging, of falsification, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, there is a certain, Russians are invited to express their opinion. And I think that is taken into account by the Kremlin. You know, this is very much a kind of a two-way relationship. You know, Russia is a very authoritarian state and Putin is a very authoritarian leader. But, you know, he does very much interact with sort of democratic institutions. And it is also very important to remember that Putin, I think, his mandate, you know, from the Russian people, his legitimacy does come from this idea that Russia is on some level a democracy, you know, that people are invited every few years to vote for Putin. They're invited every few years to vote for United Russia. So these kind of moments are always very, very important, I think.
We have a list of parties that are banned from the Duma elections. We'll come to the big one after that, but we're going to start with the ban. First of all, Navalny's, anything to do with Navalny's party is banned directly, but are there workarounds? Are the euphemisms underway? And what parties and in particular make the Kremlin unhappy?
Well, it's less really about parties than anyone who's ever had sort of any links with Navalny. So it's not just that sort of Navalny's people are banned, which they are, but it's also that anyone from any of the established parties, so whether that's one of the liberal parties, whether that's one of the communist parties, you know, these people who've maybe had some dealings with Navalny in the past, which a lot of people did before he became sort of, you know, politically toxic, are banned from the election. So, you know, we saw the communists' presidential candidate from last time round banned from the elections because he'd been too pro Navalny. You know, we saw a host of sort of lawmakers from sort of liberal parties, from the communists, just banned from the elections, dubbed sort of extremists, and said you can't run because you've had sort of dealings with Navalny. But generally, I think, you know, there's a big tendency this year towards sort of vetting the candidate lists and making sure that even if, you know, Russians vote for parties that aren't United Russia, they're not electing sort of big radical sort of, you know, deputies. They're electing sort of people who are tame, people who are sort of domesticated, people who can be controlled by the Kremlin. And I think that's, you know, that's going to happen. You know, if you look at the candidate lists, there's no one who's going to sort of really rock the boat in the Duma on these lists.
You have a list, Yabloko Party, for example, the Party of Growth, the independent candidates. Are these regionally based parties as well as ideologically based?
Generally, it's sort of a pretty uniform picture throughout Russia. You know, the Kremlin controls the process of party registration extremely sort of carefully. So, you know, if you're for Yabloko, right, which is like a sort of an old liberal party from the Yeltsin period, you know, a lot will have to be agreed with the Kremlin, you know, and you might be allowed to run in some elections, but there's a very clear line. And if you overstep that, you're in trouble, you know. So, you know, sometimes we can certainly say that Moscow, it's a big city, it's very educated, it's a bit more liberal. You know, nationalists do a bit better in places like Siberia and the Far East. But to be honest, it's a very distorted electoral picture, frankly, because United Russia is very dominant and it kind of wins everywhere, really, because they've got a lot of resources on their side. They've got the full support of the state and of the media. So it's kind of, you know, it's very much a dominant party system around United Russia.
I'm speaking with Felix Leit. He is CBS News, based in Moscow. He is also Moscow Times, and the surprise we turn to next, which is the reigning challenge to the United Russia Party led, which is Vladimir Putin's party. The reigning challenger is the Communist Party. Yes, here in 2021, the undead Communist Party. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.